Baillie & Harding Ultra Sound System is proudly sponsored by Innovate, UK's number one trail running company. And this month, they've given me a bag, a beautiful bag, a handbag, no less. They haven't really given me a handbag. They've given me a Race Pack 20, which is otherwise known as the Jack Pack. It's the pack that he wore when he won the Spine back in January. You know, remember that? When he really beat Damien by like, I don't know, like 4 days or something. Anyway, the Race Pack 20 is a running hydration vest, multi-day runs and races over long distances, holding up to 20 litres of fluid, kit and nutrition. Zero bounce, suitable for everything, waterproof, compatible with the 2 to 3 litre reservoir, holds 2 500ml soft flasks, it's got pole attachment options and multiple stash pockets. It's brilliant. I wore it when I did the Spine Challenger South recently, and it says it's 20 litres, I reckon it's more. If you want to be in with a chance of winning said bag, please enter on our Instagram page. The link is in the link tree. And we'll be announcing the winner at the end of the month. On with the pod. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to introduce us like detectives today.
Oh, cool.
Okay. Yeah. Welcome to the Baillie & Harding Ultrasound System. This is a Baillie & Reed Investigate special with me, Chief Superintendent Baillie. And my co-host, that's you.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to tell me what I was.
No, you need to say what you are.
I'd just be like one of those special constables, so they just let them have a go.
Special Constable Reed. Right. Okay. Perfect. Welcome, everybody. We've got some big investigations to do today. But the first investigation we need to do is find out why I haven't seen my friend Kirsty for over a week. She'd been missing. She went missing. Where the heck did you go?
I went to Italy. Missing in action to do some running, unsurprisingly, because unlike other running people, we really like running, don't we?
Unlike other running podcast presenters, we actually do go running sometimes.
Yeah, or just like general outdoors influencers. Yeah, I went to Italy to stay with a couple of friends and went running, and it was just absolutely glorious. The weather was in the 30s every day. They've got an amazing house. It's an amazing place. So yeah, it was just like I was doing bits of work as well, but like get up, go running. Like I'm training for a big hilly race, Tour de Gion, and the one thing I can't get in the UK is climbs of like kind of 1,000 meters, 1,500 meters. But straight out of their door, I can just hike up to, you know, 2,000 meters. Lovely like refuges on the way, stop and get water. Yeah, lovely, lovely, lovely days out. Beautiful, like stunning trails, amazing. Then kind of back to their lovely house, go out in the evening, go to the local kind of bakery kind of place where you choose tiny cakes. They say, how many cakes do you want? And we say, hey, we'll do like 20. There were like four of us. So then you choose all the tiny cakes and then you choose your ice cream. And yeah, it was just like that all week, really. Really blissful, really nice.
Oh, my God. Sounds like a dream.
It was an absolute dream. Absolute dream. Yeah. And like catching up with friends, I haven't seen a lot over the last couple of years and probably neglected a little bit. So that was really, really nice as well. So yeah, it was just amazing. Like great, great running, like nothing ridiculous, but just like, you know, doing like 3-4 hours a day, just packing in like some really solid training.
What does did you say 2,000 feet?
Meters.
Of a meter. Ah. Meters,
yeah,
2,000 meters out the door,
1,500 meters out the door. So
no, mate, yeah, that is disgusting. That's vertically up. That's isn't that like as high as the ozone layer?
I think it, yeah, possibly space. Yeah, so they live at about 500-600 meters, and then their local kind of big hill is Mont Baroni, which is 2,100 meters, I think. So just climb straight up there. I mean, it was.
Are you gonna do a reveal on who these friends are?
Well, I can do, but it's off. You know, no.
I think that you should do a reveal.
Well, they're just friends.
Who are they?
My friends Robbie and Natalie.
Ah, Robbie from Robbie Britton.
Yeah.
And Natalie from Natalie Robbie Britton.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, friends in high places. That's a joke. Because they live.
I see. Right. Okay.
That was
okay.
Good, wasn't it? Was... Friends in high places. To 2,000 meters. Oh, okay. 1,500 meters. That's like 4,500 foot,
Yeah.
right? That's disgusting. Actually, a disgusting amount of vert. So, how many miles would that be to get up to the top of that in from where they live?
Up to the top of Mont Barony was like 5, 6 miles.
That is just fucking rancid. So it that is, listener, think about that. Think about races you've done where they've been 50 miles and the whole vert across all of them has been 4,500 foot. Like, that's madness. So when you're doing that, are you walking up them?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 100%.
How do you feel like when you get like? Does it affect your altitudiness?
Not really. Not until you get up to about 2,000. Then it just becomes a little bit kind of, it becomes a little bit harder. You just feel like you're working harder, like your body's just working harder. But I didn't really. Yeah, I was only really up at 2,000, so it didn't really affect me. But interestingly, tomorrow I'm going to go and do my hypoxic training, so on a treadmill with like a sort of altitude chamber thing with a mask on to kind of mimic how it'll feel much higher than that, just so that I know how I'm going to feel. But no, I mean it's basically a big hike. Like you go out, do a big hike, you've got your poles, and it's like really kind of varied terrain. So it'd be like tiny bits of single track. Like Natalie was injured, so she was just kind of suggesting routes for me, which generally seem to have head high ferns.
Oh, for fuck's
A lot
sake,
of
they have those in Italy. I thought those were a British, I thought those were a Lake District thing.
No, a lot of brambles, and fucking hell, the amount of mosquitoes was unreal. I think on the second day, like went out, like neither of us were expecting mosquitoes, so didn't put any
Well, you don't, do you, on the mountains? They live in by the tarns.
and it was kind of late in the season for them as well. They're normally a lot earlier, so we just got absolutely bitten. Like it's disgusting. So yeah, they were like awful, like just attacking you and like horse flies and stuff like that as well.
Oh yeah, mate. Like they're just there was a bit I was out at the weekend and I went to a bog and it was like, oh, it was like a summer bog. It's been there all winter. It's got summery now. And like there were I could feel the horse flies jumping out and hitting my leg. And I was like, not today, Satan, fuck off. Like it was horrendous. And you feel little like nips and you're just like, it's just horrendous, isn't
Yeah.
it? Well, I didn't think that I thought horse flies and ferns were a very British thing. I didn't realize they were an international creature.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't know. But no, it's very green. It's very green. But yeah, the insects were horrible. So yeah, what we did was we got they've got two dogs, Rosa and Pika, and those dogs, their health care and general care and food and everything is like 10 times better than for any human.
No. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. No. You have met Queen P. You know how Queen P is looked
Yeah.
after. You cannot tell me those dogs are better looked after than Queen P.
I'm not saying they're better looked after. I'm just saying that many of the items they use to care for them. So like they've got their own mosquito spray, which was all natural and like none of the horrible sort of stuff. So I just went out kind of smothered in that every day. So yeah, but no, it was a very, very, very good week. Like very good for my training, very good. Like mentally, just a really good like switch off, and yeah, really, really good, really good. How about you?
When are you moving to Italy?
Like genuinely thinking about it.
Imminent.
Not imminent, yeah, not imminent, but
I mean, I should know the answer to this question, but I don't. Where is Tour de Gion?
in the Aosta Valley. So.
Right, so where's the Aosta Valley? I'm being playing devil's advocate here because there are people that do not know what Tour de Gion is. I think we should make more of a big deal of it since two of our presenters are going to run it.
Like imagine, right, everyone knows where Chamonix is because that's where all of the running
Yep.
influencers live, slash
That
go for
Chamonix is the
4 days.
centre of ab yeah, the Chamonix is the centre of absolute cockwomblebury.
So like you've got Chamonix on the one side, so that's kind of like France, Italian kind of near the Italian border of France. Okay, then you've got say Milan on the other side, like a couple of hours to the east, and then the Aosta Valley is kind of like the bit in the middle, so like the other side of Mont Blanc, I guess, to Chamonix.
Is it in Italy then?
Aosta Valley's in Italy, yeah, but it's close to the kind of French and Swiss borders.
Right. So when you run Tour de Gion, do you go into France and Switzerland or you just stay in Italy?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it's mostly in Italy, but bits of it may just go into Switzerland. I don't know the answer to that. I'll find out for you.
When you do accidentally go into Switzerland, you have to show your passport.
Well, do you know what? On the UTMB, you go into France, Switzerland, and Italy, and you have to take ID with you. Because in theory, you could be asked at the border.
Right. We shall discuss that later because that's relevant to our interests, isn't it? Special Officer Reed. Okay, so Tour de Gion is how many miles again?
330 kilometres, or well, Natalie says it's actually 350 kilometres. So that was a pleasant surprise.
What is that in miles?
In miles, that's what 210, something like that.
Okay, and how many verts is it again?
20,000 metres.
Fuck off.
24,000
That's.
metres.
Oh, stop adding to it. Even I've got to get the calculator out for that. That's 72,000 feet. Do you know how many feet Everest is? Because everybody likes to do it in
Yeah,
Everest.
I find that highly relevant because everyone's been
It
up
is because
Everest.
everyone's. We've all been up Everest, so we can compare it to Everest because we know about Everest.
10,000 meters in Everest, so 30,000 feet.
Okay, so that's three Everests. Okay. The answer, if you're asking me if I want to go and do that, is a stern no.
You say that now.
That's true. I do remember having a similar conversation about the spine about 4 years ago.
Exactly.
But the answer to do I want to come and eat ice cream, sit on rocks and wave at everybody is yes. So that is what I'll do.
Okay.
And also bring you snacks whenever you need a snack.
Okay. I might need quite a lot of
Within
snacks.
reason. I'm not going up one of those hills for a meal
Yeah,
snack.
fair enough.
With Tour de Gion crewing, are you allowed to go and are you allowed to crew anywhere, or is there special crew points?
I think you can crew anywhere. I'm not the expert on this. I've never done it before, and I'm not an expert on crewing. I mean, you can definitely crew in the life bases. So you've got the life bases all the way around, and then you've got the refuges. So I'm not sure whether crew are allowed in the refuges. I can check all this stuff. I didn't know this was going to be a detailed
It's not. I'm
thing.
just asking because the listener doesn't know what Tour de Gion is. Like, I don't know what Tour de Gion is, and I'm balls deep in the sport. So, and I was going to ask my friend as well what he thinks, and he'll tell me because he's done it before. So, great. Okay, this is a great little project because we're going to see it all unfold in front of us. Well, I'm glad you had a nice time. I'm not that keen on you moving to Italy, but I suppose at least I can come and see you.
Sure.
It's not that far away, is it? Where did you fly to?
Milan. Milan, the good one. What's it called? Not Bergamo, the other one.
Not burger face. Did you miss your dog?
I miss my dog
That's
terribly, but they've got two pointers. So it's quite, I could
perfect.
shut my eyes and pretend I was just tickling Gilbert's ears.
That's kind of creepy. I hope Gilbert's not in the room, didn't hear
He's here.
that.
He's right here.
Right, Giblet. What good boy. What a good boy. I'm glad, so glad you had a nice time. That's great, mate.
Yeah, no, it was good. It was good. How about you? How was your last month?
Feel like I need to look at the calendar.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was fine. I've got to do Lakeland 100 this weekend. That's going to be
You don't
nice.
have to do it. You get to do
I
it.
want to. I want to get to
So there
do
you go.
it. I'm going to have a lovely time. Do you know what's really interesting? This isn't really interesting. Do you know a thing I've noticed is I've basically my attitude to Lakeland 100 is it's a big adventure because it was all just a big adventure. You know your like little fun times in Italy. That was just a big adventure, wasn't it? Tour de Gion, it's a big adventure. It's all a fucking big adventure. It's part of the unique fabric of our lives. It shouldn't be something that's stressful because we have enough stress in our lives. So our hobby should be a big adventure. I've noticed people literally, well, not literally, figuratively shitting themselves about this race online and in real life. Oh my God, I'm really worried. Oh my God, I'm so anxious. Why?
What are they worried
Like,
about? The
I think not finishing it
right.
or like the cutoffs. And I'm like, well, the thing is, it is what it is. You know what it is. You've done some training now. Whether that's training is good or bad doesn't fucking matter. But you've done it, and you're not going to get any. You don't. I always say to my clients, you're not going to get any fitter, but you could get a bit shitter. So just don't do anything else. And let's just look at like, it's got 14 aid stations. It's 100 miles. It's in the Lake District. It's got a big community around it. It's like it's Top Gun themed, so it's not like the Hunger Games themed. Like it's going to be fun. Why can't people just see it as fun? And I'm getting a lot of people, maybe three or four men, who've messaged me going, just so you know, it was the hardest thing I've ever done. It's a really hard race. Thanks.
Two things not coexist though. Could it not be like quite hard but also a fun adventure? Because that, to me, would be part of the fun adventure.
I think that's it. I think people don't think that it can be hard and a fun adventure. It has to be brutal, or it has to be race to the Cafe Warehouse / Action Challenge. Do what you want, when you want, how you want, who you want.
Yeah.
Those things are hard as well, by the way, guys. I'm not saying they're not hard, but what I'm saying is they've got much longer cutoffs and you can walk, jog them, whereas this one is like you really do have to hit the cutoffs or else you ain't going to be involved anymore.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I'm a little bit baffled about the whole thing. It's this one, like the 100, it's the arc of attrition and it's the spine that get this like, oh my God, I'm shitting myself. But you don't need to be like that. You honestly don't need to. I think people think they have to be like that. Even at the sharp end, that's not performance approach mindset, is it? That's performance avoidance. So it's like, I met a guy at the weekend. I went to the end of the Helvellyn Sky Race, which was very cool because they got this medal. I'm just getting the medal, listener, that I took off somebody else. And the medal, look at it. It's made by earthruns.com. And it's seeds.
That's cool.
Smashed into like mashed up cardboard.
That's cool.
Or whatever. It's fully biodegradable. And you get the medal. It's on a ribbon that is made, it's not even a ribbon. It's not plastic. That's just like a bit of fabric. So you get it and then you put it into earth and then you put water on it. It grows wildflowers out of it. So your medal can grow its own flowers, which I think is so cool, right? And I just absolutely loved it. So I'm gonna try and get them to do something with us at the running show. Running show announcement next week, listener. Anyway, the guy that won the Helvellyn Ultra, Sky Ultra, was a guy called, I can't remember what his name was. I'm going to just quickly look him up. Now, he was quite young. He was 35. And he was one of those guys that was just like bimbling around, just like wide-eyed and just really lovely, drinking a cup of tea. And I bumped into fellow podcast host Damien Hall, who was running that race. We had a conversation with this man. And he lives in Reading. He's 35. He's never done anything like that before. He turns up and he just wins it. He trains in Reading. And his attitude was just so amazing. He was just like, yeah, no, good, really good adventure. Like, really fun, super fun. Like, and we were just like staring at him, like, how the fuck did you manage to do that? Because it was a big win over Simon Roberts, James Noble, and then Damien. And he's like, yeah, no, I just loved it. It was just like, yeah, you just keep going, don't you? And I'm like, that man, that glowing optimism. And like, he's obviously very talented and he's obviously naturally gifted. And he has, you know, he's trained on the mean streets of Reading to go and run across Swirl's Edge. Like, what the fuck? But it's that attitude that I really like.
Yeah.
It was just lovely. What a lovely man to win a race. You know, there's none of this like brutal elbows out, serious.
Yeah.
It's just joy, absolute joy.
Yeah.
And I very much enjoyed that. I've just noticed this a lot of, I think, people being much more nervous than they need to be. And it makes me a little bit sad because it sort of ruins your thing, doesn't it? Your experience.
Yeah. 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 I wonder whether some of it comes down to kind of why people enter. It's like, if you enter something because you think, oh, I really want a big adventure. So like, I went to Tour de Gion because I think I want a really nice holiday. I want a walking holiday in Italy.
Yeah.
And, you know, don't care about time. And I'm clearly not going to win. So it's like, you know, there's no pressure on me. I just want to go and enjoy it. But I wonder whether people sometimes enter these things because they feel like they have to. It's like a rite of passage. Like, I've got to do Dragon's Back. I've got to do Lakeland 100 or the Ark or whatever. And they don't necessarily kind of want to. They just kind of think, oh, you know, I've got to do that. I can't do this other fun race where you get to eat cake on the aid stations. I don't know, it's weird, isn't it? I don't get it. And to be honest, that's one of the great things about getting older is that I tend to think, well, you know, what, I'm standing on this start line, I'm going to have a massive adventure. I don't know what's going to happen, but I know it's going to be an adventure because I know that I'm not going to do very well and I know that I'm going to be disappointed in how slow I am generally.
Shall we just go back into that? I don't think I'm going to do very well, because I think even standing at the start line of the Tour de Gion, you know as well as I do that is an achievement in itself. Because you don't just enter, do you? You've got to just enter it.
No,
but you've got to get in a... Is it a ballot?
Yeah, it's a ballot, yeah.
Do you have to have previous?
No, I don't think you do. I think anybody can do it.
Well, they can't because it's 72,000 foot vert. So no, not everybody can do it. I think you have to be a certain, you have to have a certain CV to be like, I'm comfortable doing this and I'm safe doing this as well. Because if you've only ever fucking run the Thames Path 100, you're going to have a problem with that vert. You just are going to have a problem with that vert. Unless your, his name was Rob Corney. Unless you're Rob Corney, in which case it doesn't fucking matter. Like, you just turn up. But I think that, like, I think something like Tour de Gion, you can't do it. Not very good. I think like anybody that has a go at it is a fucking like hero because it's hard.
Yeah, but and it also, I guess the other part is I really enjoy doing the training. So it's like I've just had a lovely trip to Italy. I'm doing lots of hill sessions. I'm doing lots of interesting stuff I've never done before, and you know, all the preparation. Whereas I think maybe if all you're doing is kind of shitting yourself about doing the Leighton 100 in 3 months' time, and you're not necessarily doing the specific, you know, training, then maybe you do sort of the week before get on a Facebook group and go, oh, I've had shin splints for
I
3 months.
think that Facebook groups should be avoided at all costs. All the information you need on the race is available on the website. You don't need to go in the Facebook groups. You don't need to chat to anybody about kit. You don't need to change anything. You don't need to worry about what other people are doing because what other people are doing is bullshit. Like, if imagine if we all worried day to day what other people are doing really in minutiae.
There's two reasons.
Some people have sex with goats. You don't go and do that.
There's two reasons people go on
I've heard.
Facebook groups for races. I think that's A, to just get put their excuses in, or B, to show off to everybody that they've done more. I remember like the only one I've ever done, I
Yeah.
think, was the Dragon's Back one, just because I felt like quite green, and I thought, oh, maybe I'll pick up some good tips from this. And all it was people. I had a broken leg like a couple of weeks ago, and I'm just thinking, you know, should I start? Or should I? Yeah, I don't know. Like, and then other people just going, "How's everybody else's week been? I've done 80,000 meters of vert," and I'm just like, "Wow, none of that made me feel good."
Yeah. Hi guys, I've just come second in the Kapalkura Park run, so I decided to enter Dragon's Back for this year. That sort of thing. Yeah. The Dragon's Back one is renowned, I think, because I left it because it was giving me anxiety. Because I was like, I started to think, oh my God, should I be doing all this shit? So I just left it. So yeah, be careful the Facebook groups. They're not always that helpful, people. So just don't. But also zoom out, like in a little drone. Look at what you're doing. Look at your life, and be like, what a life I lead that I can go and run a marathon or a trail marathon or round in circles for 6 hours and everybody thinks that's okay, like, because it's not, it's weird, but like, what, like, that, it's just adventure, it's just part of your life, it's not your whole life, it's just part of it, and it is a joy to be part of. I very much enjoyed the vibe, the Helvellyn Sky Ultra. It was lovely. It was really family-ish at the end, like in a sort of a, there aren't any kids there, I hate kids, but in a, like, everyone sort of knew each other and everyone was milling about and everyone had a good day and it was just nice. I just liked it. I thought if I could get more skippy over the spiky stuff, I reckon I'd probably quite enjoy myself, to be honest. I went and did the first leg of the Bog Graham backwards
Did you?
by
What
accident.
with Sarah and Pickle's date, Murphy?
I went on my own, little violin. It was supposed to be my a taper run, my last long run, and I said to Sarah, because she lives local, can you do me a route? And she just sent me a route, didn't look at it really, just was like, all right then. Out of my Airbnb. And then when I met her at the bottom of, you know, at Skiddaw House, because she was on a shorter run because she's got a very fun adventure coming up next week that I'm not going to talk about because it's a secret, but you'll all find out about it eventually. So she was on a little shorter run and she met me at Skiddaw House with Murphy. And by that point, I must have been 10 miles in to what was supposed to be a 13 mile run that turned into a 15 mile run with 5,000 foot vert. And she was like, all right, Ali. And I'm like, hi. She's like a little tiny, beautiful assassin, isn't she? She's just like, she looks like butter wouldn't melt, but she's a monster. And I was like, that was quite, she was like, how was that? I was like, it's quite punchy. She was like, yeah, that's the first leg of the Bob backwards. I was like, thanks. Thanks so much.
Where did you start then?
Threkeld.
Oh, what, and you went up
That's the golf course.
Hall's Spell?
Yes.
Was
Yes.
Pickle all right with that?
As Pickle and
Oh,
Zorro.
shit, yeah.
Yeah, Zora was off the lead. Pickle's like, I love this. I'm a mountain dog. She Pickle's a Bulgarian rescue dog, everybody, but she's part mountain dog. And honestly, you put her on one of those ridges and she comes to life. Her eyes go like big, her ears are up. It's like she was, well, sounds, she was born to be on a ridge like that. She loves it. She absolutely loved it. And even, and I was looking at it thinking, oh, that's a bit spicy. And then I was like, actually, it's all right. And it was fine. But having her attached to me was not as great as I'd wanted it to be, but there's loads of sheep. But it was really nice, and we had a really good day out. But the first bit was horrendous because it was just a climb for like 3 miles off the bottom of the golf course. Did that. The descent down towards Skiddaw was boggy as fuck. It's so boggy in the lakes at the moment. It looked like it was just grass, but it wasn't. It was like a wet mattress.
Yeah.
And I lost my shoes like 3 times. So just licking my phone, licking the coffee off my phone.
Nice.
It was nice. And I felt very strong. And the dogs were annoying me a bit. And I got bitten to fuck by flies in the ferns and in the bogs. And then there was another horrible hill upwards from the valley, from the bog. And it went up for ages. And it was really hard.
Was that Mun Grisdale? If you came over Blancaff and then down.
Yeah, down the back of, down the back,
the
along
river.
The bogs. Then it went up again. And it was like an insidious climb out of the river, which for some reason felt much harder than it looked. I might have been tired. I didn't sleep very well, and I ended up at the top of Blencathra in a mood with the dogs, like a proper mood. So I sat down and I ate 12 Bella Forte chews, one after the other. That got me out of the mood.
Wow, I'll remember
other
that.
Snacks are available.
I'll remember that tip.
Other snacks are available, guys. So that's what I was doing. We've got some pretty important work to do now. We've had a chat, but we have got some important work to do, haven't we?
We have. Very. I mean, you know, some people would say crucial.
I can't believe you took a week off to go to Italy when you should have been investigating.
I was investigating it.
I think you might have taken the investigation international.
I did. I take this podcast seriously, Ali. I've got notes.
Me too. I've got voice notes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So this week, what are we investigating?
This week we're investigating lovely Gemma, the listener, who wanted to know why when she starts an ultra, she has a pack that's massive and she makes it look like a tortoise. And then she'll be stood next to somebody who's got a teeny tiny pack, like maybe they've just got a bag of Maltesers in there. That wasn't her quote. She wants to know what is she doing something wrong? Are they doing something wrong? Why do some people have a massive pack and others have a tiny pack? And this is a highly relevant investigation for us because we're both at the end of the bigger pack scale, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. And I get shit off people for my pack. Do you get shit off people for yours?
No.
Do you not?
Not really.
What does Robbie talk to you about? Robbie is Kirsty's coach. Does Robbie talk to you about your pack?
Not really, no.
I don't give a shit about her pack, mate. I don't even see it.
Not being funny, but I should know what to have in my pack. Like, my coach won't tell me what to have in my pack.
My coach tells me what to not put in my pack. Like, she's like, take that shit out. She's like, we're going to cut your toothbrush down to like, and I'm like, I'm not taking a toothbrush. Like,
does she think you do an MDS?
I don't know. But like, Damien has a go at me for my pack. He says I carry way too much stuff. But then that's a man who dehydrated and held Ellen. So there you go. He says I carry too much water. So we have this, like, there's a lot of people that have got a lot to say about people's packs, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I agree with you. I am one of those people. We're both fair people. We like the fairness of the race, don't we? And I am like, why is it that I'm standing at the start, usually for Centurion race, and you, mate, are wearing a belt, like a belt.
Yeah.
And I have got a 20-litre pack full of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, that's a good example. So Robbie did the OCC years ago with a belt. So for the OCC, you don't have as much mandatory kit as the the CCC or the...
The CCC is the UTMB race, right?
Yeah, it's like 50K. Still in the mountains, you'll still be up at 2,000 metres, etc. So you still need, the weather can turn. You still need waterproof trousers, waterproof jacket. Probably need another layer, head torch. Do you have to have a head torch? Maybe not. I'm sure the head torch is in the mandatory kit.
I mean,
be the same as a British ultra mandatory kit.
Yeah, yeah. So there probably is a head torch, right? Hmm. Because I think something that's really important to look at with this bag thing is the difference between tiny bag man and big bag man slash woman person, tiny bag person and big bag person in experience and speed.
Yeah.
Because Robbie is quick.
Yeah.
Like, he's fast, isn't he? So he might not need a head torch, whereas I will, because I'm going to go into the night. Yeah. So if it's not on the mandatory kit, he just won't take one, will he?
No, if it's not on the mandatory kit, no. I'm sure that he wouldn't. Like, all those people at the front of the race, I'm sure they wouldn't. But yeah, he put all his kit into a belt, and I couldn't believe that he'd managed to do it. I sat there at a table whilst he took it all out, and he was like, waterproof trousers. They were like, tiny, like, I don't know if they're like OMM ones or something, but they do that tiny lightweight kit.
But would they have fitted him?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like he's lightweight on this sort of race, but he's very sensible. He's not silly. Mm-hmm. You know, waterproof jacket that would have been, you know, one of those kind of very, very thin ones, but it so it'd keep the rain off, but it wouldn't keep you dry and like sustained sort
would
of.
Has it got the right hydrostatic head?
Yeah. So you have to have that for kit check. They're really stringent on the kit check and stuff. And tape seams, obviously, and all that sort of stuff. You know, and then he gets out this tiny prison phone. But yeah, it was amazing. Like you know, that's
what is tell me about the tiny prison phone. Is it like the one at Zoolander?
Yes. Yeah. So you don't
what is that small?
It was I'm trying to think. It would be
was it like a Motorola snapshot one?
No, it was like a normal phone, about the size of a like maybe half a Milky Way.
What?
Yeah. Like a tiny phone, like you couldn't really press the buttons on it unless you just had to do 999.
I want to see this tiny phone. I'm going to ask him to send me a photo of his tiny phone.
Okay.
Actually, I've got somebody. Damien said to me, "I'll send you a picture of my tiny phone." And I was like, "I told you not to do that because it's disgusting." But I want to see these tiny phones. I just think that they look like toy phones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So anyway, you can't. I mean, you can do it. You can get it all on the belt. But if I was doing that race, I would probably have my I don't know. 12-litre pack or something like that for that same amount of kit, and I would have a much thicker jacket, and I would have my phone because I want to take like a nice picture from a Strava, and mm-hmm. I would have
phone, GoPro, microphone, leads for those batteries.
That's very
battery
much
charger.
You, very much not me.
Yeah, I don't have a GoPro. I've got a GoPro. I never take it out, but I want to take my proper phone out because I want to listen to tunes.
Yeah,
and I bet prison phone hasn't got Spotify on it.
I bet it hasn't.
Robbie.
So yeah, so but it's all it's like what you know. What are you willing to sacrifice? Like some people sacrifice a bit of comfort, don't they? Mm-hmm. I don't want to sacrifice comfort. Like I was telling Robbie the other day that I, you know, for Northern Traverse, I had two waterproof jackets in my bag, and he was like, "I've never heard of anyone taking two waterproof jackets." I'm like, "Wow, I do that quite a lot."
You don't follow Ali on Instagram. Hello, she takes five or six.
But it's that thing, isn't it? It's like I could. So like maybe Hannah Rickman at the front of Northern Traverse, she's probably got one waterproof jacket. She's probably worn it the whole way. It's probably really wet, mm-hmm. but she's moving so fast that it's not become a problem. But, you know, if my jacket wets out as it did at Northern Traverse, you know, then, and then I'm going to be wet, then I'm going to be moving slowly, then I'm going to be cold, then I'm going to be putting myself in a, you know, a dangerous situation and putting, you know, the volunteers and the race in a not good situation either. So it is, so it's levels of comfort, levels of safety, you know, speed, but, you know, as Robbie would, I guess you'd play the clip from Robbie in a bit, you know, it's two different races. Mm. It's somebody's going to be out there for 6 hours. Somebody's going to be out there for 25 hours.
The thing that I, you know, how I like to have a little bit of an argument with people sometimes,
yeah.
How sometimes I like to be a bit poke the bear. Yeah. I spoke to Hannah on this podcast, actually, I think about her kit, and she just didn't get changed for the whole time.
Yeah.
I don't know how. But she didn't. And yes, she was moving at speed, but she runs very hot. So she never, like when she was running in a t-shirt, whereas I had a long sleeve base layer and a hybrid jacket and a thing on. One, she's running faster. Two, she's running hot and I run cold. Three, you know, she's going to be finished a lot sooner than I am because she's running faster. But my argument is, what if something goes wrong?
Yeah.
What if you trip and you fall and you're on the floor and you have to wait for fucking mountain rescue or wait for the ambulance or whatever? That's when you need to get that shit out of your bag. And if you don't have that shit in your bag, that's when there's going to be a problem, right? Yeah. And of course, it doesn't happen very often. And I think if you're at the front of the pack, you've probably got medical provision that more, you've got the top of the medical provision, right? Because you've got people watching you because they do. It's always like in the big races, they watch the front of the pack or they treat them slightly differently. Like they have their own kind of support squad going with them because you've got to set the aid stations up. You've got to make sure that shit's ready for them. And I imagine they probably have their own medical provision. I fucking hope they do, because if something happens, and I think, I don't know this and I need to talk to Mark about it, but Mark pulled out of the Northern Traverse or the Lakes Traverse because he got very, very cold. And on that hill. And I know his bag was tiny. And I don't think he had as much. He had all the mantra kit. Yeah. He had all of it, but he didn't have anything extra. Yeah. It was very cold and wet, wasn't it? Obviously, we know this. And I think that until it happens, they would rather go, like Damien said to me, that he sees the bag packing as part of the competition. So like how light your bag is part of the fucking competition.
At his
and
level,
he doesn't
not at
like
our level.
Yeah, at his level, not our level. And if someone goes past him at UTMB with a bigger bag than him, he gets really angry about it. It's like, all right, mate, but still. And there's like a danger issue to it, which is kind of like exciting. Like, how much can I get away with at kit check and on the hill? Whereas I am risk averse. So I'm like, if I could fit it in my bag, it's coming with me.
Yeah.
It's fucking coming with
me. Yeah. Like, it's like Robbie says in his thing, it's risk reward strategy, isn't it? It's like, what are you willing to risk at the front of the race? Like, he's done races where he's like, okay, I'm going to go all out. If it goes wrong, I don't care if I finish, you know, I'll just DNF or I'll just, you know, just stop, whatever, don't care. But it's all about, you know, winning. And then he's done other races that are, you know, all about he wants to finish. And then that would, you know, that kind of risk reward kind of strategy would also sort of dictate what he has in his pack. You know, how much food you take with you. You know,
shall we play his clip?
Yeah,
let's play his
play
clip,
his clip.
And then we can talk about it.
Okay, so the question is, why does, at the start of an ultra race, why does my pack look like I'm carrying a tortoise on my back, and some people look like they haven't got enough equipment to go down the shops? And there's a number of reasons that this might be the case. I'll start with some of the ones that people most like they think of first and foremost. One, that person that you're looking at isn't carrying enough of the kit because maybe they're an idiot. Maybe they're cheating. They haven't read the rule list, or they've got friends on the course that are going to hand them the stuff they need as they go around. The flip side of that is that you might be carrying too much. That's another thing to look at. You might have a lot of equipment that you've got there that you don't need, so your pack's bigger, whereas someone, the other person's got what they need and not much else. Some of this comes down to experience. So as we start out in ultra running, there's a lot of unknowns. And as we, over time, we kind of get to a place where we know what's going to happen. We know the stuff that we need and the stuff that actually has spent a lot of time in our pack and we've never used. And some of that stuff is we've never used it because we've never had an emergency where we need to. So we might still carry good quality kit of that regard. But other stuff that we might have carried a third spare dry top for the first 10 races and realised that we've never used the third spare top. We've never eaten that particular bar. We've just carried one the whole way around and got it to the finish every time, like a lucky charm. But actually, we've got to the point with more experience, we discover that we don't need certain things. The other side of this is, if referring to like an elite runner compared to someone middle of the pack or at the back of the pack, is that we're all racing a different race in terms of time. So if we look at things in terms of distance, say you've got a 100-kilometer race in the mountains, this could take the lead runner 10 hours. It could take someone towards the back of the pack 30 hours. These are two different races. Although it's the same distance, you're spending a different amount of time, different nights, different amounts of daylight hours, different temperatures in these particular environments. So you have different needs in terms of kit. And someone else, if they're going to be finishing time for a late lunch, they might not need two massive head torches because they don't need a big spare one. They're not going to use a big spare head torch. They might have two tiny ones because they know they're going to finish before it gets dark, ideally. And they don't really think they need to carry two big head torches because they're not going to use them. If they have to use a head torch, their race has probably gone terribly wrong and they might not even finish. And that comes into the next bit, which is different ambitions in the race. You have a higher risk reward strategy at the front end of the race. They might be thinking, okay, I want to win this or I want to be top 10. I'm not fussed about finishing. So I'm actually going to go out quite hard. I'm not going to carry some of the stuff that I might need if it takes me twice as long. And the risk is, it's like not carrying extra spares on your bike in terms of punctures because you want to finish before everyone else and you're not counting on having a puncture. If you have a puncture, you don't want to carry on the race because you've already lost it. And then, this the other little bit there is it's different quality of kit. So as I started out, I might have had some kit that wasn't very good, but it was lightweight and that was my main focus. And over time, I've bought good quality kit that I've kept for years and years that's actually does the job well and is small, but that often comes at a premium. They say you can have it. Is it cheap, lightweight, and good quality as the three things? You can pick two. And if you have all three of them, it's going to be very expensive. You can't, it's not cheap, is it? So that's the things I would look at and maybe look in your own pack and say, what can I find a smaller version of? What will still do the job, will keep me safe in the conditions I might face, but actually isn't totally necessary for the race I'm doing? What can I do without? And what risks am I willing to take within safety reasons? If the weather changes, that person with a tiny pack, if they've got an ounce of common sense, will take additional kit. But if they don't, then they're a wally.
I mean, that was actually a very good clip. Thank you, Robbie. Honestly, thank you from the bottom of my heart. That was actually very informative.
It was really...
much more, 3 minutes of informative. We could have just cut me and Kirsty talking out.
Exactly. Yeah, it would have been much better. But no, he was very kind to do that for me. And he really thought about it and made notes and thought about what to say. So he does take those things very seriously. He's a very good coach.
After you sent me that, I went into the Centurion Ultra Team group, of which he's in, and I was like, guys, have you got anything to say about bags? Because I'm being very interested to see what these people say about the bags. And he's like, I've just done a voice note for Kirsty. I was like, I know you have. And it's off the back of your excellent voice note that I was asking other people, because in that group, you've got Tristan Stevenson, who ran the Thames Path with a belt and won it with a belt. And there were so many people that got angry about it, like that were like, that guy hasn't got the right amount of magic kit. So James had to check his kit at halfway and at the end with a camera on him, being like, I'm going to go through his kit now and show you what he's got. And Tristan had everything. And in this group chat, he was like, it's the Thames Path. It's not Helvellyn. Yeah. So I knew that if anything happened to me, I'd be picked up within minutes rather than even on any of the other hundreds, it could be an hour. And the same with like Mark Derbyshire always goes very, very light. Listen to this voice note from Dan Lawson.
Actually, Ali, I'm like the complete opposite. I remember when I ran UTMB, I didn't have any of them. I don't own any of the managed kit, so I have to borrow it all the time. I borrowed Darren's head torches, and they're basically torches, like proper torches, just like glued to your head, very heavy. And UTMB, I remember I had to have like waterproof trousers. So yeah, keep it pressed. I remember I had to have waterproof trousers. And so I went round this chap's house who Charlotte's uncle knew in Lesouche, and I had a pair of waders, like fisherman's waders, in my bag, because that was all the waterproof trousers I could find. And then this, like, I can't remember what I had to have as well, like this huge coat. Anyway, it was ridiculous. My pack on UTMB was crazy. I never had to use those waders either.
But Dan's renowned for running with a drawstring bag at times, hundreds of miles.
The first time I came across Dan was years and years ago. I used to do a checkpoint on the Ridgeway. I hope I haven't told this anecdote before. on the Ridge, you know, the Ridgeway race, the Trail Running Association one.
Yeah.
I used to do the Bury Down checkpoint, which people might remember from the race. And
Bury Down is a dogging site, guys, so you might know it from dogging as well, depending on what your hobbies are outside running.
Okay, always lowering the tone. I was trying to give a high level anecdote. And we're setting up, right? We weren't expecting any runners to come through there till like 4 or 5 in the afternoon. About 2 o'clock, right? This guy comes up, right? He looks about 15. And he's just got a drawstring bag, and he stops to chat for ages, and he's just standing there, and he's like, he's just got a plastic water bottle that he, you know, like you'd...
Like an Evian one.
Yeah, like an Evian water bottle. Don't know what else he's got. But yeah, he's got this drawstring bag, and he's chatting away, and we're like, wow, do you not need to get a move on? He was like, oh no, I'd rather stand here and talk to you guys. And he was like the nicest guy in the world. And that was Dan, and he must have been about 40 by that point, but he looked about 15. But he was like so far ahead of everyone else. It was unbelievable. What I was going to say.
Drawstring bag.
I know, that hurts my shoulders thinking about it.
Apparently, so that voice note he sent, like we were talking, people were like, Dan doesn't have anything, doesn't eat anything. And everyone's like, Dan. And Dan's like, actually, guys, I had to have a proper mag light on my head because I borrowed it off Darren. Yeah. And I had to take waders. But I don't think he took anything else, because he did run that race with a drawstring bag.
Yeah.
And also, it's Dan Lawson. So I think Dan should do those CBeebies nighttime stories, because he's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
But one of the big arguments, not arguments, but one of the big tips in this group, so the Centurion Ultra Running Group, people who don't know, they are my running team, but they're all elite athletes apart from me. So they've got some really good stories about stuff. We talked about food. They're like, we don't take food. Like, we just take it off the aid stations, or we take gels. And I think that at that level of running, when you're being quick, and I'm talking they're coming in 10, 15 hours ahead of like mid to back of pack people, you can get away with that, but I can't fucking get away with that.
Yeah.
I have to take food.
Yeah. Same here. And food's probably the heaviest thing in your bag as well, isn't it, generally? for me.
Water.
Yeah, water.
Food.
Yeah.
So the water argument, I run with a big bladder. In fact, I've reduced that bladder for Lakeland because it's like you're going to hit an aid station every 10 miles, so you just don't need to. James Elson's tip was to take one flask of the water filter, and when you're on those mountain races, just don't take any water and just fill it up when you can. Problem with that is if it's a dry year, then there is no water. And then the other thing that they were talking about was the people that cut up their kit so that when they go to the kit check, they have the minimum amount of kit. And hacks for this, do not do this, people, don't do this, include chopping up your bivy bag to be 1 centimeter square. You've got your foil blanket, whatever it says, or your bivy bag is like a bag of crisps, basically. And then tights. Like, I've heard stories of people taking women's 40 denier tights as their full leg cover.
So there's this famous story, I don't know if it's folklore, but a famous story about Killian at the UTMB. So UTMB, like, when it started, it's like this, you know, French race. This little Spanish dude comes in, no one knows who he was at the time, and he's winning. He's like miles off the front, so they're all like slightly pissed off. So sometimes at races like UTMB, you get a kit check when you leave a checkpoint, just to double check you've got a jacket or a head torch, whatever. So they keep kit checking him every single time he goes to a checkpoint, just to try and disqualify this like young Spanish kid that they don't know who he is. And he's like, if you don't have a bivy bag, you have one of those like blankets, like foil blankets.
Yeah.
So he goes, and he gets out this like tiny square of foil blanket. But because it says in the mandatory kit, you must have, you know, foil blanket. It doesn't say what size. And then he gets out a pair of his mum's tights and all this sort of stuff. And they can't, basically they're trying to find reasons to disqualify him. And they kind of hated him. And then he went to the press thing afterwards and just like charmed everybody, and everybody kind of fell in love with him. And then he kind of, you know, came back to the race every year. But yeah, so the next year they kind of introduced this, you know, your blanket has to be this size. Your tights have to be, you know, leg cover that fits you and, you know, would keep you warm sort of thing. So then it became more and more and more and more and more detailed, which, you know, obviously that's a really, really good thing in some ways.
I think, you know, if you look at the spine mandatory kit list is like a book, and it's thick, and it's like, and it's got acceptable, not acceptable. If you do this, you're going to get, Lily's going to fuck you over. If you do this, Lily's going to fuck you over. And it's very, it gives great like insight. So what I can't understand is why people then go into the Facebook groups to start debating it, because it's like, there is no debate. And like, Lily will come into the Facebook groups and be like, what the fuck are you talking about? There's no debate here. Like, it's very, very clear what we want you to bring. And I know that there are people up the sharp end of that race that go in there and they're all excited because they're like, I think I've hacked it. They will get pulled up. And the other thing is money, isn't it? Because if you have the cash to splash on a fucking bivy bag that weighs like less than fucking one of the hairs on my head, that's really great. But most people don't have that cash. Yeah. So I think a really good thing to do if you want to use that stuff is to ask around and borrow it, because people aren't using it all the fucking time, are they?
Yeah.
I have this fantasy of setting up like a kit room where people could just hire the whole kit for a race.
Yeah.
But I think it's there because it's there for your own safety, and it is a very much a personal thing. Do you know anything about how much weight you carry? Do you know any of the stats about how much slower you are versus the weight that you carry? Because I'm like, ultimately, isn't it just down to training with the weight you're going to carry?
Yeah.
Is that not it? Like, because the elites are like, no, it's down to every single kilogram matters. Like, every single tiny little shade bit of fucking tiny bit off the bivy bag matters. Whereas I'm like, does a kilogram matter?
Yeah, also, like, we're carrying more weight than them to begin with, even before we put a pack on, because we're like normal human beings and not like, you know, tiny, tiny stick people.
One of the arguments at the spine is women versus men weight-wise, because say you get Sarah Perry, she's tiny, little tiny China doll, and then you get, I don't know, like Mark Derbyshire, who's tall and strapping lad, right? They've got to carry the same kit.
Yeah.
So same weight of kit. So especially things like the jackets, they say the jacket has to be like 295 grams. Like, it has to be not down. It has to be synthetic. So, because down gets wet, and if it gets wet, it won't dry out, et cetera, et cetera. So there is an argument that for women, maybe the kit should be slightly lighter, or like should be less, because they've got to carry more weight on a smaller frame. Thoughts, feelings on that?
Well, I don't see that, to be honest, because so if, so, like, my clothing will be smaller, than say Mark Darvish's anyway, because I'm a smaller human. And like my head torch, I don't want to scrimp on my head torch. Like that's going to be really important. So how are you going to get a head torch that's lighter for women? Like I might carry less calories as well because I don't need as many calories as somebody bigger. So I would have thought that would sort of happen almost naturally with the things it can happen with, but not. Yeah, and then some things you just can't do anything about it.
The stove, sleeping bag, the mat, all that fucking shit. Yeah. Like, but also it does depend on how comfortable you want to be, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And I, like with me, like with you, I'm like, I'm going to take an extra jacket. I'm going to take an extra base layer. I'm going to, because I tell you what, I've just done the Lake 100. I've just done the Lake 100 kit list. It's really funny. The way it's written is hilarious. Go and have a look at it. It's really fucking funny. And it's very thorough, but there's not a lot of it. It's not like a spine kit list, but it is like very clear. It's like if you take, you know, your long sleeve base layer, your long sleeve tights have to be in a plastic bag wrapped up and not touched, and not to put them on during the race. Yeah. They will be checked at the end. And if you need extra to put on during the race, you haven't got enough kit. Which is really good because I think people think that is the stuff you can put on during the race. But if you are hanging off the edge of a fucking mountain waiting for 4 hours, that's what you're going to need to put on.
Yeah.
But the one thing that's not on the list for Lakeland is water carriers. Oh. Unless they're just like, you don't need to carry any water.
That's a bit weird, isn't it?
Yeah, they just missed it. I think it's just missed it off. Oh. Maybe I'll point it out to them in a sort of mansplaining type, women's splaining.
Yeah,
type
people
way.
Enjoy that. They for the Lake London as well, you have to have emergency food as well that you can't touch, don't you? Which I always think that's really good.
I have that always. I've got gel, these like two gels and two Velaforte bars that are probably past their sell-by date now. But I keep the stuff that I'm not going to use, compass, whistle, that food, usually map, there's just the stuff I'm definitely a spork, because I don't tend to eat with a spork. I eat with my hands like a monster. But I tend to keep that wrapped up in a bag right at the bottom of my pack, because you're not going to touch it, so you don't need to fucking even look at it, do you?
Yeah.
No. Unless there is some sort of terrible, awful emergency.
Agree. I think the conclusion that we're reaching is that people think that having light kit is a magic bullet, and it's not a magic bullet. Like, you still have to. It's like, I'm not going to go and spend like 500 quid on a jacket and get a lighter jacket and suddenly be a better runner or suddenly do better at races. I'm going to do better at races if I train really hard and I do, you know, do the other 99 things well. And, you know, the lighter kit is kind of one of those 1% things, isn't it? So if you are Mark Derbyshire or Sarah Perry, whatever, yes, you'll kind of get that 1% extra performance, whatever. But if you're me, then
you're 1% more likely to die, or like 20% more likely to
die. Yeah, that's it, isn't it? It's like, I think it's one of those things that's like a magic bullet. I don't want to put the work in. What shoes can I buy that'll make me faster? What pack can I have?
I'll buy these fucking £7,000 Adidas shoes because they make me do a parkrun PB that no one actually gives a fuck about, but they won't. But there is a psychological part to it as well, I think, especially at the sharp end. Because there is, you know, there is, like, anecdotally, I've heard people be like, you look around, you look at other people's bags, and if yours is the smallest, you're like, well, I'm the best. I'm not really sure. I'd like to sit them down and be like, why are you the best?
Yeah.
You got the most money? Are you the most fastest? Are you the most unlikely person to fall over, smash your head open on a rock and have to wait for mountain rescue?
Yeah.
Like, why are you, why, how, isn't it funny, and I'm going to talk about men here, how men want, in that situation, they're like, the smallest is the best. But in most situations, they're like, the biggest is the best, or the most is the best.
Yeah, BDE. Yeah, that is...
Little bag energy.
Little bag energy.
LBE. That guy's got LBE.
It is, yeah, it is weird, isn't it? But I think, Lee, you hit the nail on the head earlier when you said it's a big privilege thing, isn't it? It's like, you know, Robbie said in his clip, when he started out, like all of us, you know, he's buying like bulkier kit, you know, you've got like maybe some Regatta waterproof trousers or whatever, and then, you know, like...
Regatta, ooh,
I've got some
heavy.
I've got some dog walking ones.
Walking the dog? Yeah.
Exactly. No, but, and that's kind of like what Dan was saying, like you start out and you kind of borrow these things, you know, I didn't have a very good head torch, I had a heavier head torch, you know, and then over time you get more experience and you realize I can save some weight on this, and maybe I've got a bit more money now, so I can invest in a slightly better pair of waterproof trousers or whatever. So it is a big, big privilege thing. So those people who are showing off about their smallest pack, it is a little bit like, hey, well, I've got £500 to spunk on a pair of waterproof trousers.
What do you think is, if you're going to spend money on kit, say you're going to start doing ultramarathons and you're going to spend money on kit, what do you think are the top three things you would invest in really good kit?
Oh, well, I mean, a waterproof jacket, that's got to be the main thing. Like, there's a big, big difference between like a sort of light waterproof jacket that will keep the rain off for a little bit in the summer and a kind of really good waterproof that will keep you dry for hours and hours and hours in the mountains. So that's, I mean, I think that's the biggest thing, isn't it? I guess the other thing's head torch. Like,
do you have, and I know we're sponsored by Innovate, I know we're sponsored by Innovate, but do you have a recommendation for a jacket that you've had that is fucking the bollocks?
Yeah, so the jacket I've had since 2018, and it's still brilliant, and it's the Montane Spine jacket. And like
I too, as sponsored by Innovate, have a Montane Spine jacket, because the Innovate jackets are great. They are great, and you can layer them, and they're great. But for the big stuff where it's very wet, I found that jacket to be the one. I know Innovate are making a new one that's coming out in February. I know they are, because I've seen it, and it is pretty impressive. But I think that sometimes you've just got to be honest with your listener and be like, that coat is, they don't even make it anymore, do they?
No. And the one you've got is a lot lighter than the one I've got, but the one I've got is like a really good outer shell. So yeah, highly recommend those. But you basically, if you're doing like long ultras, you're looking for a walking jacket. You're not looking, don't look at the like lightweight running ones. Look at, you know, a light, you know, jacket that's going to have a really, really good waterproof shell that'll keep everything out. But yeah, waterproof jacket, head torch for me is the other one. It's like, I've been through many head torches over the last 20 years or whatever, and it's always like a balance of power versus, you know, how long the battery will last and how heavy it is and all those sorts of things. But I mean, that's a good example, actually. So at Lavaredo, you start at night, and a lot of people optimistically think they won't be out for a second night. So even though their head torch is on the mandatory... Yeah, exactly.
If you think you won't, you probably will. Just saying.
So even though your head torch is on the mandatory kit, a lot of people ditch it at halfway because they think, oh, you know, I'll be back in Cortina before it's dark. And I was coming down the last descent. You got this long, I think it's about 10k, like down through the woods, and it's getting dark, and this Italian guy behind me just goes, oh, I have no head torch, I run with you. And I'm like, I mean, what are you going to say? Like, yeah, like, I want people to be safe, I want to help people out, you know, ultra running's a nice sport, so yeah, sure, run with me. So he ran right on my shoulder on this downhill, and I was like, this is fine, I'm helping him out, this is fine. Then he starts going, run faster, and I was like, mate, this is my top downhill speed after 120 kilometers. It was the most stressful experience of my life. So yeah, don't be a dick. Like, keep, even if you think you'll be back before dark, don't ditch your head torch.
Oh wow, what a prick. Did you finish with him?
No,
I say thank you. Did he buy you an ice cream?
I ran as fast as I could until I could see some other lights, and then I said, like, you run with those people, and then I went back to my own, you know, slow downhill running. So I just like gave him to some other people. So he was fine, but I didn't need that in my life.
No one needs that in their life. Fucking brilliant. Right, head torch. What head torch do you use then?
I've got a silver head torch. I think it's a silver trail runner or ultra or something. So it has, it's like really, really light little head torch on the front, but really, really bright. And then it has a battery pack that has, because they're like a Swedish company. So one of the problems I had at Northern Traverse last year was my head torch kept going because the battery was getting cold. So this has a little...
Honestly, listener, listen up, right? I saw someone the other day testing their head torch in their house, and they'd left it on all night to see how long it will last. That's not going to work, because any change in temperature, hot or cold, will affect the battery on your head torch.
Yeah, massively.
It doesn't matter what head torch it is, but you can't do that, test that at home.
Yeah.
Because it just doesn't fucking work like that. And until it happens, you're like, what the fuck is going on? And then you suddenly realize, it's like your phone, isn't it? Your phone will really run out of battery if it's very cold or really, really hot.
Yeah.
So just be aware of that.
Yeah. So you could, listener, with that, you can either have the battery pack on the back, or it's got a little extension cable, so you can put it in your, you know, against your body. So put it in a front pocket of your jacket or something like that, so it keeps it warm. So that to me is like the perfect head torch. Now you just swap out the battery pack and it lasts ages. So yeah,
my silver
for the win for me.
My favourite, having used all of them, apart from the silver one, I haven't tried that one, is the Fenix HM65R. I love it. It's so bright. It's got like four different settings. It lasts for fucking ages. It's like a lighthouse. And even on the Arc of Attrition, which is like a good 14 hour night, it was still like lighthouse bright. Whereas I've used a Neo, I bought a Petzl Neo when everyone was banging on about them and it was a piece of shit. And the battery kept, like, you had the same problem on the first Northern Traverse,
yeah, that was
Neo, didn't you?
Yeah,
it
yeah.
got cold. It just, the batteries are 70 quid each, really expensive. Not, I'm just not going to say anything else about it apart from don't fucking bother. If anybody wants a Petzl Neo, you can buy mine for £1. But the Fenix HM65R, I absolutely love it. I just fucking love it. I've never had a better head torch. And it's a canister battery, so it's a little battery that you just unscrew and put the battery in, as opposed to like a pack on the back. So I love it. Yes, do invest in head torches because you're not going to need to reinvest, are you? You're going to have that for like 10, 15 years.
Yeah. Same with jackets. Yeah. All this stuff, isn't it? You look after it. You'll have it forever.
Damien and Laura Innovate. Athletes wear a Innovate, I think it's called the Pro Max jacket, and it's from like years ago. They don't make it anymore. It's black.
It's really good.
They don't make it. We had Athlete Day the other day and Laura was like, can you please bring this back? And I was like, yeah, please bring it back, because it's like they're running around and I'm like, why haven't I got that? And it's just because they go through cycles, don't they, of making stuff. It really fucks me off when they do that. But they've had that jacket for 10 years and I've actually got a Montaigne jacket downstairs. It was the first jacket I ever bought for the Autumn 100 back in 2017 I still use for dog walking. Like the seams are coming apart and I'm having to reseal them, but it's still a great jacket. So, and what's the third thing you would invest in?
Ooh, that's a difficult one, isn't it?
Mine's waterproof trousers.
Yeah.
Proper waterproof trousers. Innovate do a great trail pant, which is a race pant, which is very waterproof, very windproof, and very hardy. So, like, if you get on your ass and slide down a rock, they don't rip. And actually, they look nice, which makes all the difference, I think.
Yeah.
They've got, like, a tapered leg. But I've worn cheap waterproof trousers. They just make you sweat. Whereas these ones, because the aim of waterproof trousers generally is to keep you warm rather than dry. They will wet out at some point. They're fucking brilliant. And I think so worth the investment, because until you need to use them, you will turn your nose up at waterproof trousers.
Yeah.
But one day on the hill, it will be raining and it'll get super windy and you won't be able to feel the bottom half of your body, and you'll put them on and the game will change. And then you'll realise what you've been missing out on.
Yeah.
So that's my third thing to invest
in. I think that's an important point, actually. It's like I started to take I always took mandatory kit seriously, but you do tend to sort of think, oh, you know, I've done all these races, I've never taken these things out of my pack, like all my waterproof mittens or waterproof trousers or whatever. And then you have one experience where you use everything in your pack and you're on the verge of using your whistle and you think, right, this is one.
We've had that on training runs, haven't we? But we've had to get the drama gloves out.
The drama gloves. I did a race. It was like a mountain race. It was in August. And the night before, they texted us and said, you've got to have like an extra insulated layer. You've got to have a warm hat. You've got to have some thicker gloves than what were on the mandatory kit, et cetera, et cetera. And I thought, oh, absolute idiots. Like, I'm going to have to go and spend all this money now and, you know, source this kit last minute. And I used every single thing in my pack. And it was a snowstorm and it was scary. And I think everybody needs to have that scare before, you know, so that they think, I'll take my hat and gloves out in June, you know?
Yeah. And like, I think that's one of the things when I talk to my friends who are fast, who, God bless them, have never had that scare. Not yet. And it's like, I'm amazed you haven't had it. Who, like, I just want to, you want to almost put them in a controlled scare situation, don't you? Because I've had it, because obviously I'm out for longer, so it's more likely to happen to me. But I've been out on the Carmarthen Fans. It's been four seasons in one day, where me and Pickle have been in a vest and shorts. And then suddenly we're running away from a massive snowstorm and the snow's coming right over our heads, like dumped on us. And I've had to put on everything in my bag. And it sounds, when you talk about this on a podcast, it sounds like you're making it up. I'm not fucking making it up. Like, there's a reason that my bag is full of shit and shit that I might use or I might not use. But a lot of the time I do use, and it ain't going to change. I don't want to, it's just not going to change. Like, it's just how I roll. And I think I'm really thrilled about the Lakeland 100 kit list, because it is smaller. So it's like, and there's lots of checkpoints and I'm going to see my bag at halfway. So it's like, I can, you know, and you start at night as well. So you're starting in your warm kit and then you're actually changing into your less warm kit. But then you've got to realize you're going to go into another night, because you are going to go into another night and you're not going to see your fucking bag before you go into that night.
Yeah.
So, But the other thing is to remember, wherever you're running, if you're running a mountainous race, the weather forecast can't be trusted, because they have mountains have their own weather systems. They just have their own fucking weather systems. And yeah. It can go from being okay to being absolutely abhorrent in seconds. And it won't say that on the weather forecast. You just won't know about
it. I think this is probably one of the big differences, isn't it, between if you're sort of stepping up to doing ultras. You know, if you're there are lots of different kinds of ultras, like we talk about in your workshops. You know, there's a lot of different things in the mix. They can be very, very long, they can be flat, they can be mountainous, they can be, you know, in the middle of nowhere, they can be like super remote. They're all slightly different races. And what, you know, the kit that you need for I don't know, like the South Downs 50 is very, very different to what you need for a race at the same time in Scotland or in the Alps or wherever. So it's like, I think it's probably worth saying, if you are kind of looking to get into, you know, those more kind of mountainous, exciting, remote, kind of hilly kind of ultras, then the type of kit you take with you is going to be different all year round.
Yeah, it is. And I think it's probably where me and Kirsty have the Bailey and the, I think I would call it the Bailey and Reed matrix, but actually it's the Reed and Bailey matrix because Kirsty came up with it. It's a top secret matrix that we present at workshops together to show people how they should choose their races, but we will never, ever publish it. And what else was I going to say? I was going to say something else about kit, but I forgot. I think the key thing to remember when you're looking at Instagram or you're getting your information about races is the people you are seeing are elite athletes. They will be finished 10 to 20 hours before you will, and that means they're not going to need the shit that you will. At Helvellyn at the weekend, I sat outside basking in the sunshine for 2 hours, yapping away to my mates, having a lovely time. I went home and it started to fucking hoon it down, like it was like monsoon like rain, and I thought, there's still people out there on the hill. Yet this elite lot, they finished 4 hours ago. They're at home in the bath having a good sleep. Those people out there on that hill, it was like October, they need all the kit they can get. Because if they don't, they're going to get hypothermia.
Yeah.
And it's the same fucking day. And there are still people there. Like, that's what you need to fucking remember. You are not, most of you, sorry guys, going to be bothering the podium. So you do need to take more kit.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Be the tortoise. That's what I say. Like, to
be the tortoise to
Gemma's,
with it, yeah.
To Gemma's question is, you know, that person stood next to you. If they're not elite, they're probably either being silly or, you know, the other thing we haven't talked about is cheating. Some people... just cheat. You know,
I'm going to admit something now. I really hope James Elson is not listening to this, because this is an admission from me of guilt.
Yeah. Is it that time you got in the car? When you got in the car at the Thames Path?
On the Thames Path 100 race, I came in. I think they didn't know. It was during COVID times. They didn't know if I was third or fourth. Humble brag. And I presented... As I came in, they said, well, they're going to kit check you. And I started to panic because I realised I didn't have a reusable plastic cup in my bag. So I went round the corner and I said to Lorna, can I have your reusable plastic cup, please? She put it in my bag. And I presented her cup as mine. I'm so sorry.
Well, I hope that James is going to DNF you now.
I think he probably will issue a DQ, a retrospective DQ on that.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. I've carried this weight for a long time now.
Yeah.
I did have a reusable plastic cup, but I left it at an aid station. I took Lorna's from her and put it in my bag.
She does look quite tearful, actually.
For that, I am truly sorry.
Yeah.
But that's as far as I've
gone. Just a horrible person. You're just a terrible, terrible person.
I'm a liar. My whole career is built on a lie.
There you go. You just undone it all with one admission. What is the best cheat you've seen at a race?
The best cheat. I don't know if I've seen it. Oh,
we've both
one.
Got people DQ'd, haven't we?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have. You don't want to fucking mess about in front of me and Kirsty, especially when I'm on the spine safety team, because I will take you down. I get bored. So I start to investigate people.
I'm big on fairness. Yeah. If you do a race, yeah. Like, you know, particularly the type of races we do, fairness is a very, very big part of it. So if I see that...
The other thing is, we will talk to each other during the race. So Kirsty will message me and say, I've seen this going on, what do you think? And I'll give her my 2 pence worth and vice versa. We do investigate on the hoof.
I think I did ask you. So when I did Northern Traverse with somebody who had an illegal pacer, and that it did my head in, because like, by that point, I think we'd been through two nights. I think I was leaving Richmond And this guy picked up a pacer, and I was like, don't worry about it, you know, it's he's a dick, like, just don't worry about it. And then I saw the pacer again 15 miles later, and I was like, he's been paced for 15 miles, I mean, he's not getting away with this. So I think I asked you, and I think I perhaps asked Kate and Matt my moral barometers.
Kate and Matt are nobody's moral barometers apart from Satan's.
and yeah, I came to, so I get to the next checkpoint and I reported him. And he did end up
I was furious about that. Because you, it was hard, that's such a hard race because you're so lonely, aren't you? You're lonely. Mm. And you've been hallucinating real bad. And I was like, if you'd had a friend with you, if I'd have been able to come and trot along with you, life would have been better. So do you know what happened when you reported that?
So I went into the checkpoint to report him. I had taken his number and everything. And I went in there with a very loud voice just going, excuse me, there's been a
breach of the rule.
Exactly. And then they said, do you mind if we talk about this outside? And I was like, well, I will not be cowed. And went outside. And then they explained that he was sitting at the table in this very small checkpoint. So we talked about it outside. And he said, yes, we've had another report of it, and we're dealing with it. And they ended up DQing him. But that's the sort of race. So the organizer of Northern Traverse is the organizer of Dragon's Back, Kate Rath, races like that. And he is exceptionally fair. He has thought of everything. Everything's a level.
Yeah, because it Dragon's Back and Kate Rath, everybody has to have the same bag, same literage, same drop bag, same literage, same weight. Like, everything's the same for everyone, isn't it?
So you're not getting away. You are not getting away with anything there. Whereas another race that I did a couple of years ago up here in the lakes, actually, it's a race you've done. There were some people who missed out like a large portion of the race. So instead of going up a hill, they just carried on up and then back on the other side. They just carried along this kind of nice flat terrace. And the race director tried to DQ them, and then one of them was crying, so he didn't. So, like, that's the difference, really. I'm not going to name names or whatever, but Arrear events are just incredibly fair. And that's what one of the things I really, really like about them. Like, they've got really, really strong values.
But also, if you see, listener, someone that you think is doing something that isn't fair, report it. Yeah. Just go and report it to a volunteer. At the Spine this year, I watched a guy getting crude outside Nikki's Cafe. And I was like, no, mate, you don't need to be crude here. What are you doing? So I reported him. And then Winter Spine, I watched a guy being crude at Wissenden Head by his missus. I watched him being given money by her and the kids. They were outside the burger van. She was giving him money to buy stuff from the burger van. He should have had his own money. And I said, you can't do that. And she was like, I'm just giving him a five. I'm like, you can't. I don't want to see you again. And then he was like, oh, they're not doing anything. They're just saying hi. And I was like, I've told you, no more of this, right? Then I watched him walk to his car with them, open the boot of the car where there were four flasks full of like electrolyte, and he was taking his old flasks out, I was like, no. I took his number, took the registration of the car and reported him, and he got a 2-hour time penalty. And I don't know what else was going, but they were like, we're going to keep an eye on him for the rest of the race, because obviously if she'd done it once, they've done it once, they'll do it again. Don't do it. Look at the rules. Don't do it. Because it's just not fair. If I had somebody meeting me with some Coca-Cola, in fact, this weekend at Lakeland, Sarah and Cara, my buddies, are out in the lakes, and they're like, can we come see you? I'm like, of course you can come see me, no problem. They're like, can we give you anything? I'm like, nothing. You can't give me anything, so please don't. I know that you and Rob are gonna be on the course, that's gonna be fucking so nice to see everybody, but don't bring me shit. I don't want shit. Everybody knows this.
I wouldn't. It's a non-food race. Even if you asked me, I wouldn't.
But what if you had a can of Coke and you just dropped it on the floor and walked away? And then anyone could have taken that.
You know me better than that.
Yeah, I do. You tell me to go fuck myself. Yeah. I asked you to bury a chicken tikka for me on the moors, and you said no.
Yeah.
So
I thought you were going to say a body. bury a body.
Yeah.
That's totally different. That's not racist. Yeah.
Different. Don't do it. At Rat Race, when I worked at Rat Race, we had a guy come in to do a kit check, and we said to him, you haven't got your waterproof trousers. And he was like, I don't need them. I was like, yes, you do. This is a Stuart Smith story, actually. Stuart Smith watched him walking over to the shop, the Rat Race shop, buying the waterproof trousers. He came back, kit checked, and then we passed him with a kit check, and then he went back to the shop, went with the receipt, and got a refund for the waterproof trousers. We watched him do it. So the next morning, we're like, come in. Where's your waterproof trousers? didn't let him start the race. So you haven't got them. You had the opportunity to buy them. You took them back. You haven't got them. You can't start the race. He went fucking mental. But it's like, everybody has to have this kit. In fact, when it was the Aaron, Ultra Tour of Aaron, where I first ever put on waterproof trousers because I thought, I can't feel my legs. And that's when I realised how good they were. And now I love them and I will wear them all the time.
Are you wearing them now?
Yep. I wear them for heat training. I put them on in my conservatory and just sit here.
Yeah.
but yeah, it's I think that covers our investigation into the small man bags.
I think so. And I think it also proves that you probably should be a police officer given the amount of race policing you're doing.
I know. I mean, you don't get bored of the safety teams. There's always something to do, but you do start to see things happening.
Mm.
And you're like, suspicious. I actually think that Phil Hayward Brown hates me because I'm like, I've got a report to make. Where's the report thing? And last year on my team, on my safety team, the guy that was in charge of the team was an ex-police officer. So you can only imagine the state I got into around
Well, here. Maybe I shouldn't tell you this on a podcast, but you know, the guy that I met at Lakeland last year.
Yes, your husband, your future running husband, fake running husband, man.
Yeah, he had some very good police stories. That's all I can tell you about that.
Love it.
Yeah,
this has been a great investigation, and the conclusion we've come to is, you do you, hun.
Yeah, that's it. Just be safe. Ignore them. Ignore all the other runners and what they've got in their backpacks because they're probably idiots. That's the conclusion we've come to.
But if you've got any funny. I mean, we're going to do this tongue-in-cheek. If you've got any ideas for reducing the weight of your bag, please do send them to us via DM because I will be interested to hear them. And I'm also going to put up an Instagram story saying, how do you think you could best reduce the weight of your bag?
But don't say put the phone up your bottom.
That just adds weight to your body, doesn't it?
But it frees up space in your pack, I imagine.
For what? For crystals, for more crystals. I like to put my crystals in my bag for good luck. What are you doing this weekend? Are you coming to see me?
Apparently so, yeah.
Have you made a banner?
No.
Can you make one?
No, because you're an adult.
No.
Are you going to cry? Yeah. Are you going to cry on the finish line, bite your medal, and then I'll make a video of that?
Then do a wank sign with my hand. Yeah, I am. Yeah, I am. I'm going to tell, and also, just so you know, I'm going to say it was the most brutal thing I've ever done.
Yeah, most brutalist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably going to cry. And just generally overreact.
Yeah, why not? That'd be amazing.
I'll tell you what might happen. I might get an injury at about 75 miles, do a Facebook Live where I'm crying, or an Instagram Live where I'm crying, and then magically just get better.
Yeah.
And finish
it. If people aren't crying on Reels, I'm not interested.
Me neither.
Feel.
We haven't talked about the malevolent ghost on the Race of the Stones that was pushing people over either, so we need to investigate that a little bit further. Very fully over a year, okay. People.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's loads of other things. So if you've got an investigation that you need to be done, like Gemma.
Yeah.
She sent us that.
Thank you, Gemma.
Thanks, Gemma.
Yeah.
Thank you, Gemma. Please send it in via DM or Instagrams. Yeah, Instagram is DM. Or email. Pete's got one that he's going to give us.
Apparently.
or any other method. We'd love to hear it. Thank you very much. Got any change you want to add to the playlist?
Have you stopped recording? Are you still recording?
Still recording. Got any cheese that you want to have to play this?
Oh, it's good I didn't say anything really bad then. Yeah, came up with one the other day. What was it? Doves.
Which doves
there
song?
There Goes the Fear.
Oh, what a tune.
Yeah. I heard it on the radio the other day and I thought I'd put that on.
Okay. Also, I've been listening to Definitely Maybe on repeat. It's 30 years old this year. It's such a good album. I feel like I might put the whole Definitely Maybe on it. It would really piss Anna off if I did that. And Anna won't even hear this because she doesn't listen to these podcasts. So, hi, Anna. Okay, that's your lot. We'll see you next week when I have got Damien in the hot seat, but we'll just be talking about, he's got a quiz for me and it's Damien Hall podcast. I've agreed to give it to him because he just moans about me bullying him all the time. So I'm just going to let him do it. And then we also got double drop because we're going to do the debrief with Holly on Lakeland 100. Exciting. That's what we've got time for. I love you. Bye. Thank you for listening to the Bailey and Harding Ultrasound System sponsored by Innovate. We would absolutely love it if you could just take 1 minute to visit the BritishPodcastAwards.com and vote for us in the Listener's Choice Award because you're the listeners and we know that this is the choice that you want to make. It's the only choice. It's the best choice. Why not make it? Follow us on Instagram. It's Ultrasound System Pod. And on Facebook, we have a social group as well, so you can meet up with people in real life.
We love you. We love everything about you. Keep your informations, your encumbrances, your correspondences all coming in on the usual places. You can DM us, you can voice note us, you can do whatever you want. Email us if you want to. Send us a letter. Why not? We love you. Please go and vote for us in the British Podcast Awards. Please. I'm begging you. Please. Thank you. Bye-bye.